Tonight was the fallout from AEW Full Gear, big pay-per-view this past weekend. It was a night where Tony Khan tweeted earlier today saying, quote, "The balance of power in wrestling would shift." And I don't think he was referring to tonight. If he was, well, I'm still waiting for that shift to happen. But I did think it was a good show. Thought it was a good follow-up to the pay-per-view. Not what I would consider a blowaway show or anything like that. You know, AEW's been talking about a lot of surprises. And we got two of them tonight on the show, a tease for one, another surprise at the end, which really wasn't much of a surprise. I mean, I think a lot of us figured with that pack video package last week, he was coming back. I even said, you know, maybe we'll see him this week. We got the Lucha Bros going one-on-one. Why are we getting a second match between Phoenix and Pentagon? And we found out the answer to that tonight. Indeed, the bastard pack. He was the big surprise at the end of Dynamite. I liked the end of Dynamite. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the Inner Circle segment, MJF, the induction into the Inner Circle this week, and a big announcement about the AEW Championship match coming up, not at Revolution. They're not waiting for the next pay-per-view. We have the date for the Kenny Omega, John Moxley match. We're going to talk about that. There was rain in Jacksonville tonight. Before the show started, Cody came out before the live crowd to talk about the weather conditions. I guess it was raining sideways there. Daly's Place is an open-air venue. And I guess it must be this tropical storm Eta is, I think, moving through South Florida. So they got a little bit of rain. I think that's why you saw the red velvet mat around the ringside area. They wanted to make sure that everything was all sopped up. Nobody was going to slip and fall and break their leg or break their neck or anything like that. Now, thankfully, nobody did. But they had to contend with some rain before the show went. I had to contend with a YouTube TV outage. I didn't think I was going to be able to watch the show tonight. I didn't even know if I was going to be able to go live. YouTube wasn't working. YouTube TV wasn't working. Then YouTube TV was working, but not YouTube. But here we are. Hopefully we don't go down in the middle of the stream tonight. And I was rushing to catch up with the first 30 minutes of the show, which I did not see live. So I was kind of speed watching, trying to get all caught up, and I think I did a good job. Super chats are open. I will be reading them later on in the stream. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support the channel, if you want to get your question answered, send in those super chats. You will find special donation amounts in the description down below. If you would like to do so, you have the opportunity to do that. I will read them all. And join me live tomorrow night. I'm going to be back on YouTube 8 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow night, November 12. We are doing a Sound Off Inbox. First time in a year. Sound Off Inbox. This is the anniversary edition. We are celebrating 13 years of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, answering your email questions, your super chats. And we'll have a good old time. So, before we get into everything that happened tonight on Dynamite, there was a big announcement, actually a series of big announcements, AEW-related, yesterday, that I think it is appropriate for me to talk about here, and that is AEW announced three new games that they have in development. There is a console game, currently has no name, being developed by Yuke's, which worked with 2K on a lot of the WWE games until the poorly received 2K20, which did not include Yuke's. And most people were very excited by the announcement that, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but they were very excited at the announcement of Hideyuki Iwashita, also called Geta, the director for the classic WWF No Mercy game on Nintendo 64. He has signed on to develop the new AEW game. A lot of people consider No Mercy to be the best wrestling game ever made. I never had an N64 console, but it sounds like most people love No Mercy more than anything because of how simple it was to play. Kind of game you could just pick up. You didn't have to memorize a whole bunch of button combinations. You could just pick it up. You could play it, have fun. You knew how to, you know, perform the basic moves. And so that's what made No Mercy such a fun game. Kenny Omega said their intention is for the game to be very easy for people to pick up, but difficult to master. Like the old NBA Jam game. NBA Jam, you won me over with that. I mean, NBA Jam was the shit. I loved NBA Jam. Remember NBA Jam with the big heads you can get in the game? I think that was a cheat code, maybe. Loved NBA Jam. But, you know, if they take the best from No Mercy, and they take the best from some of those SmackDown vs. Raw games that Ukes helped develop, and maybe even the early 2K games, and they kind of take the best of both worlds and combine them and merge them and put them together, hey, they could have a hell of a game. They could have a winner on their hands. But they also announced two mobile games, which you'll see here. The two mobile games, there's a casino game called AEW Casino, Double or Nothing. That's coming in the winter. Just going to have AEW-branded versions of slots and blackjack, poker, roulette, and also AEW General Manager, dropping sometime in 2021, where you get to take on the role of GM, manage a roster of stars, you can book matches, try to generate revenue and new fans. So I guess it's kind of like EWR in that way. Anyway, both those games will be playable on iOS and Android. I am very curious because, you know, from what limited gameplay we saw, I don't know, it did look a little cartoony. Yeah, I saw some people comparing it to the WWE All-Stars game, which I'm, you know, that's not really the kind of game I'm much a fan of. I don't know. It's just way too early to tell if it's more like that or is it more of a, quote, serious game that people are hoping for. I don't know. I don't even have a major... I mean, I guess I have a Switch. I don't have a major console. My brother is the gamer in the family. I mean, I bought a Switch. He uses it more than I do. He's the one with the PS5 on pre-order. I don't have time for any of this stuff. I bought a Switch, and I spent all that money on it, and I barely use it. I'm so glad that he's getting use out of it. He didn't pay one red cent for it. But anyway, I'd probably try out one of the mobile games. I don't know about the console game. But let's talk about Dynamite. So they had a new opening intro. New video, new graphics. I like the new graphics. I think it looks nice. Taz was out for a promo before the opening match between Brian Cage and Matt Sydal. Taz comes out, tells Darby Allin not to get involved. Darby was sitting up in the rafters with his TNT title over his shoulder. He was wearing a thumbtack jacket. So it's just a jacket with thumbtacks stuck in it. His jacket, honestly, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Demolition's old gear. I'm a Demolition fan, right? Demolition had the face paint. Darby Allin has face paint. Now he's starting to dress like them. Now he just needs the red tongue, like Smash had the red tongue. Taz said that Matt Sydal owns a victory because he's not to be taken lightly. He says he owns a victory over Chris Jericho, which I have to assume that he's talking about from their WWE days. They have not wrestled in AEW. I'm sure Chris Jericho and Evan Bourne had a match at some point in WWE. Maybe they had multiple matches. I don't remember one big, you know, win on TV for Sydal over Jericho, but it's possible it happened and I just don't remember. But I thought this was a good opener. I think Cage works best with these smaller guys. He can, you know, the way he just throws them around. So I thought the dynamic worked well. Sydal attempted a top rope blockbuster. Cage caught him in midair, in a suplex position. I always mark out for that. It's just a cool-looking move. Hit the drill claw for the win. Pretty no-frill stuff. Again, just somebody to feed to Brian Cage. He is the FTW champion after all. So a solid win for him. Here to open the show. So Cody. This is going to be one of the more talked about segments on the show tonight. I think when you hear people talking about this episode, Cody was out next with his last name intact. Was it Fatal 4? Okay, the poke mark. See, that's weird because I'm seeing in the chat, people are mentioning Fatal 4-Way. And what's funny about that, I was at that pay-per-view. So the fact that I don't remember this is even worse. That was at the Nassau Coliseum, if what they're saying is true. If you're talking about the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view in 2010, I was literally at that show, and it sucked. And there's a reason they never did another Fatal 4-Way show again, because it sucked. And they should not have done one. But the fact that it may have happened on that show, I actually find that hilarious. because I was there. So Cody congratulated Darby Allin. He was being very magnanimous. Is that a good word for it? He was paying respect to Darby Allin for beating him at the pay-per-view. He said he would not be seeking a rematch at this time. I love this whole thing like it's his choice. Like, I'm choosing not to pursue a rematch with you at this time. I'll let you know, you little peon. I will let you know when I want my rematch. So he's not going after the TNT title. He did say he was strongly considering a rematch, though, against his old rival MJF, which is a little weird. He didn't really explain why. When he was interrupted by a woman that we have never seen before on Dynamite before, it was definitely not his wife. This woman comes out, and she says that her name is Jade Cargill. Couldn't hear her at first if she was saying Jane or Jade. Jade. Jade Cargill. She says, I'm the total package, baby. She's a beautiful woman. I've not seen her before. I feel like I've heard about her before, but I've not seen her do anything in AEW. Now, apparently, she's been spotted in some of the crowds on AEW Dark. She definitely stands out, right? Not just because she's a pretty woman. She's got silver hair. She is ripped. I mean, the woman has six-pack abs. Apparently, she used to be a fitness model or a bodybuilder. And also, she had a WWE tryout. She had a WWE tryout early last year. I guess it didn't work out. She's still very green. Apparently, she's training or has trained at Heath Slater's school. But she is very green, as was evident by this promo. This promo, I felt like it got a little bit better as she went along, but she wasn't very good. It just felt like... one of the things I like about AEW, not every promo in AEW is a good promo. Let me just say that first. But what I like about AEW is the fact that most of the time, when I'm watching Dynamite and I'm listening to a promo, it doesn't sound overly rehearsed. It doesn't sound overly scripted. I've gotten so used to hearing promos that sound so just like monotonous and robotic on WWE television, not because people in that company can't cut promos, but because they're not allowed to more often than not, on their own. I like that about AEW. They give the talent more leeway as far as holding them to maybe some bullet points. This sounded like a WWE promo where they gave her a script. She had to memorize it. She clearly was very nervous, and you can understand it. I mean, this is her first big appearance on live TV. So if she was nervous, it's understandable. But this sounded like just a scripted, robotic promo you would see on WWE television. It wasn't very good. But she seemed to get a little more confident as she went along. She said to Cody, "You call yourself the Giant Killer. What do you know about giants?" She says, "There's nothing giant about you." And at that moment, I'm thinking, I wonder what Brandy would say about that. And lo and behold, it took 2 minutes. We would find out what Brandy thought about what this woman was saying. She says, "I know a giant, a real giant. So the next time you feel the need to think out loud, you keep that shit to yourself." And I love the censors. They try, bless their heart. They try to bleep out the words. I'm convinced they do it on purpose. We've seen this over the years on WWE, on AEW, where the censor will try to mute the offensive language, but they'll be 2 seconds too late. And I feel like it's their way of saying, hey, we want this to get on the air, but then we'll pretend like we're trying to censor it, but we're really not. We really want the word to get out there, because how bad do you have to be at your job to constantly miss these words? They're doing it on purpose. I'm telling you, they're doing it on purpose. So she goes to leave, and she exits the ring, and she's on the stage, and she stops, and she turns around, and she congratulates Cody on getting his name back, because again, now he's Cody Rhodes again. He's worked some deal out with WWE. Cody drops some of the trademark applications that he had put in, and in exchange, I guess, he got the Rhodes name back. So he's Cody Rhodes again. So she congratulated him on getting his name back. She says, but I guess you didn't have the balls to go by one name like this other giant does. And the giant that she was referencing, which a moment later brought out, as I mentioned, a very angry Brandi Rhodes, the giant that she was referencing was Shaq. Now, she didn't outright say Shaquille O'Neal. Maybe she was talking about a different Shaq. Maybe she was talking about Radio Shaq. Maybe she was talking about Shake Shack. Let's assume she was talking about the Shaq. Shaq was the giant that she was referencing. Out comes a very angry, and I'm going to talk about Shaq in a second. Out comes a very angry Brandi Rhodes. This is actually the best part of the whole segment. This was the best part of the whole segment. For all the crap that people talk about Brandi Rhodes, when this woman comes out and she is on, as she was here in this segment, and she gets angry and animated about something, she's awesome. I mean, whatever that promo was from Jade before Brandi came out, I mean, Brandi just blew that out of the water. So she, and I transcribed the entire thing, so this is going to be very comical. I'm not going to do the Brandi voice because then people will get offended. I have to be very careful with how I talk about this. So I will transcribe what Brandi Rhodes said here in this promo. She said, "Who the hell told you tonight was open mic night, bitch? You're dizzy ass up here looking real confused, so let me spell this out for you. You up in my house, smacking your gums at my man. And now you my problem. I'm gonna make this real easy for you. Don't you ever talk to him again like that. Don't you even look at him. And you know what else you can do? You can take your ratchet, trifling ass off my stage and do not come back unless I send for you. Bitch, get your ass out of here." And then as Brandi turned to go leave, Jade patted her on the tush. And Brandi didn't like that very much. So now out comes Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn looked very eager to come out there. I can't blame the guy. He came right out, like made a beeline out there. And he got between the two women. Actually, you're right. I did miss one line here. This may have been the best line of the whole promo. Let me back up here a little bit. I left one line out. She says, "Don't come back unless I send for you. Do you understand me, Heffa?" Call this woman a heifer. This woman has a six-pack of abs. This woman makes Bianca Belair look like she is the most out-of-shape woman in professional wrestling, which Bianca Belair is not. So I thought it was doubly funny, unless that word has some other definition that she was intending for here. I did laugh that she would call her a heifer, or a heffa, I'm sorry. So then, as I mentioned, Jade patted her on the ass, and Jerry Lynn came out, and he got between the two of them, and they had to be separated, and that was the best part of the entire segment. Brian Cage, Cody is watching all of this from the ring. Brian Cage comes out, he attacks Cody from behind, gives him a powerbomb, out comes Ricky Starks. Now it's 2-on-1. Darby's music starts playing, which was the goofiest thing ever, because Darby was up in the stands. He was already halfway coming down. How would they know to play Darby's music if he's in the fucking stands? This little shit like that, that just is so goofy to me. He comes down, and he's got he uses his thumbtack jacket. He's attacking Starks with it. He attacks Brian Cage with it. They bail. Will Hobbs, this was also kind of funny, because by this point, Cage and Starks have left the ring. Taz is on the ramp, right? He's on the stage. His men are down below. His men are already leaving. Taz is telling him, "Come on, let's get out of here." And they're all just kind of standing around as if they're waiting for something, and then out comes Will Hobbs from the other entrance tunnel, and he's got a chair. I'm like, why is Will Hobbs coming out with a chair? He's a little late to the party. So I'm thinking Will Hobbs maybe missed his cue. This was like a Papa Shango entrance at WrestleMania 8 where he was just a little too late. That's kind of how it came off to me here. Poor Will Hobbs. I think he was a little late on the ball. Anyway, next week it's going to be Cody and Darby against Team Taz. So that's the tag team match now that has been set up for next week. But I'm almost positive either they sent him out there late or whatever happened. It's just very bizarre. Like, dude, it's over. What are you coming out here for with swinging a chair around? They're gone. Where were you? Unless that was done intentionally. Remember, Taz has been waiting for an answer from Will Hobbs. Is Will Hobbs going to join Team Taz? I don't believe he's given them an answer yet. Maybe he is. Maybe he came out late on purpose. Although I don't believe he's part of the match next week. It's Cody and Darby, I think, against Cage and Ricky Starks. Let's keep an eye on that. Maybe Will Hobbs is going to join Team Taz after all. Maybe that was done intentionally. But let's talk just briefly here about Cody and Shaq. So this is not a huge surprise. This was rumored. I say rumored. I mean, it was Shaq himself. Remember when Shaq signed a new contract with TNT? And I talked about this and I reported on it on the Sound Off. And this was only maybe a month or two ago. And it was great publicity for AEW. This is probably around the end of the summer, around the time of All Out. Shaq signed a new contract to stay on Inside the NBA and stay with the network. And he's a big wrestling fan. And he was talking up AEW. So he was doing press. And he claimed, I believe, that in his contract, or he was trying to work with TNT and Turner to have some kind of wrestling provision put into his contract because he wants to either wrestle a match or do something with AEW. And he was name-dropping Cody Rhodes. So this is something that has been in the works for a while. Now it has made its way onto television, which means whatever they're going to do, they are now moving ahead with an actual angle on TV. Doing a match between Cody and Shaq is potentially great publicity for TNT. It's great publicity for AEW, which is why they're doing this. Okay, so I'm not saying it's a bad idea to try to get publicity out of it. They might even get some good ratings out of it if they're promoting it on television. The idea of having a match between Shaq and Cody is laughable. It is laughable, A, because of the size difference, but it's laughable because, what is Shaq? Is Shaq like 50 years old? How old is Shaq? Maybe he's not 50, but Shaq is past his physical prime. I mean, granted, he can pummel most of us into the ground. He's five times my size. But the idea of Shaq having a wrestling match, it was teased for so many years that he and Big Show, right? Big Show and Shaq are going to have a match, and they never had that big, like, pay-per-view WrestleMania singles match. The only thing we got was they were both in that Battle Royal. I think it was WrestleMania 32. Other than that, Shaq had a couple of physical encounters on Raw. I think one with Big Show, but never like an actual match. Shaq having a singles match is a disaster. All it is a publicity stunt. If they're going to put these two guys in the ring and actually try to have them work a match, it's a disaster. So I have no interest in seeing a wrestling match between Shaq and Cody. So if they want to work an angle, that's fine. Shaq can be very entertaining. Shaq even making a cameo on Dynamite, hey, I'd try to do the same thing if I were Tony Khan. If Shaq wants to be on Dynamite, are you going to be the one to go, Shaq, you know what, we don't want you on the show. You'd be an idiot to do that. But if they're going to build a match for Revolution, let's say, like big pay-per-view in February, I just think that is something that could go down in the annals and not in a good way. So let's see what they have in mind here. I just personally hope that an actual match is not in the cards. Maybe it ends up being a situation where Shaq can be part of a match, but not a singles match. Maybe it's a tag team match. He does very limited physical stuff. Maybe he's out there as an enforcer at ringside for a match involving Cody, and he ends up, you know, bumping one of the heels, and the heels take a big bump for him. Something like that would make sense. The days of teasing Shaq in the ring as a pro wrestler are long gone. Long gone. Mike Tyson is going to be fighting, by the way, in a few weeks. He's got a fight coming up against Roy Jones Jr., right? So when they were teasing the possibility of a Mike Tyson-Chris Jericho match, to me that's a little bit different because even if Tyson is older than Shaq, and I believe he is, Tyson's, I think, 53 or 54, Mike Tyson looks like he's in the best shape he's been in the past 10 or 15 years. He's been training like a madman. So the idea that he would have some kind of a match, I can believe that more than I would. I can believe that could be halfway decent more than I would a Shaq match. I just don't have a lot of faith in that. But AEW is absolutely right to try to pursue Shaq to do something. I'm not against that. I would do the same thing. But a match? I'm not sold on that at all. What do you guys think? You guys can super chat on it. Let me. What do you think of Cody against Shaq? If it actually comes to that. Cody against Shaq. Yay or nay? Chime in and let me know your thoughts, because I'm going to be going through these super chats here in a little bit. Alex Marvez. He was backstage with the AEW champion. John Moxley. If anybody can beat Kenny Omega twice, he says it's me. We now have a date for the championship match. It will be Omega challenging Moxley for the title live on Dynamite Wednesday, December 2nd. So they're doing it on television. They're promoting it as the biggest match in Dynamite history. I can't think of a bigger one. I mean, can you think of a bigger match they've done on Dynamite in the last year plus that Dynamite's been on the air? Because I can't. So that will be the biggest match they've ever done. Omega, Moxley, Championship, December 2nd. That's going to be huge. And I guess the only question is, do they do some kind of disputed finish that then leads to a rematch where there is a title change? So they could potentially hold off until Revolution in February. They're going to be doing a show called Beach Break in January. I guess they're not using Bash at the Beach again. But Tony Khan had said they're doing a Beach Break show in January. Maybe it's on that show. Beach Break, I think, is just going to be a special themed episode of Dynamite. I don't know. I mean, we are at the point now where John Moxley, you know, if you would have asked me 2 months ago, is it time for Moxley to drop the championship? I didn't feel like it was. When he wrestled MJF, I know some people were upset. Oh, MJF, he did the job. It should have been him. He's the, not homegrown, but he kind of homegrown, I guess, more so than Moxley is. But it didn't feel like it was the right time. Omega, though, is the right person to take the title from him. So whether it's December 2nd or February 27th, which is the next pay-per-view, I think the time has come. So if they want to do the title change on December 2nd, I think that that might be the best place to do it. But I don't know if maybe their thought is we'll have some kind of disputed finish and that then builds to what would be a third match between them, and that's where the title change happens. That's the only thing I'm not sure about. But Kenny Omega is absolutely the right person to be the one to take that championship from Moxley. The story then with Hangman, I mean, Hangman's going to be there in the background. I mean, that's the end of the story. We're not even close to the end of the story yet here. There's a longer story here, a longer-term story involving Hangman being the one to take that title from Omega. Omega's got to win it first. And Omega's got to win it and hold on to it for a while. So, whatever the date is, he's the one to take the title from Moxley. I now feel like the time has come. I didn't feel that way 2 months ago. The time is right. Moxley has held that title for almost a year. The time is right to do the title change. It was then time for the bunkhouse match. I guess they can't call it Bunkhouse Stampede. Wasn't that the name of the old match they did in the NWA? I believe WWE may hold the rights to that. But they called this a bunkhouse match. Not the first time we've seen a Rhodes in a bunkhouse match. Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. The Natural Nightmares against the Butcher and the Blade, who have the Bunny back with them in their corner. Allie, once again, is in the corner of the Butcher and the Blade. Anything goes. Only way to win is by pinfall or submission inside the ring. So this is not false count anywhere. Justin Roberts laid out the rules. Dustin came out wearing a sleeveless white shirt, blue jeans. He was out there looking like a cowboy. He was out there looking like his father. That's exactly the kind of thing that Dusty Rhodes would have worn in a match like this. This thing was a bloodbath. And shockingly, I don't remember if Dustin bled at all, but even if he did, he didn't bleed as much as the Blade did. The Blade, well, the Blade did the Blade job. QT Marshall bled. I don't think the Butcher did, and I don't think Dustin did. But you would think, like, in a match like this, it would be Dustin Rhodes. He would be the one bleeding more than anybody else. But the poor Blade, the Blade took a bloodbath in this match. So immediately the action spills to the outside. Blade grabs a guitar, and he smashes it over QT Marshall's head. QT Marshall comes up bleeding from the forehead. So he was the first man to bleed. Butcher and Dustin, they were outside the ring, and they walked up a staircase, and they're kind of near this equipment area in the arena. And QT Marshall ends up using a fire extinguisher to blind the Butcher. That sounds like a terrible combination, by the way, if you're a Butcher and you're blind. That just sounds like I would imagine you probably have a few blind butchers in this country that have like 6 or 7 fingers instead of 10. But he blinds him with the fire extinguisher. Dustin then gives him a bulldog down through a bunch of plywood down below, which Excalibur, I mean, he referred to it as plywood, so thank you for being specific. Back in the ring, the Blade pouring a gusher. I didn't even see how it happened. Did he get hit with a ladder? Again, I was rushing to get caught up on this because of YouTube TV being down, so I missed a part in the match here where the Blade got cut. I don't know exactly what did it, but he was just bleeding a gusher here. We had double juice, in fact. QT Marshall was bleeding, the Blade was bleeding, double juice. Abdullah the Butcher is sitting somewhere with a little smile on his face and a fork in his hand. So they start going at it. QT hits this giant elbow drop from the top of what had to be a 10-foot ladder. Only got a near fall, Blade kicked out. And Butcher and Blade hit their full death double team move to Dustin through 2 chairs in the ring. Allie had slid them in. QT then hit the Butcher with a trash can shot and the Bunny. The big payoff here at the end was the Bunny was up on the apron and she was accidentally bumped off the apron by her husband in real life. Bumped off the apron by the Blade. Bunny takes a bump through the table, so the Bunny is out. And QT hits a diamond. Actually, Dustin hit Blade first with a cowbell. QT hit a diamond cutter for the win. I thought this was fun. I don't know that this was a feud that really necessitated this kind of bloodshed. I mean, this is the sort of bloodshed that you would have expected to see in the main event of Full Gear. We didn't get in the I Quit match at Full Gear with Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston, which I thought would be a total bloodbath. We got more blood in this match, I feel like, than we got in the main event of the pay-per-view. That just feels ass backwards. And I know this feud has been going on for a little while here, and Allie turned on QT, and when there's a woman involved, you know, it gets personal. I don't know. I mean, it kind of caught me by surprise. I didn't really think this was a program that necessitated this kind of violence and bloodshed, but we got it anyway, and... But you know what? I guess that's what a bunkhouse match should be. If you're going to have a bunkhouse match, you may as well do it the right way. I thought it was fun. With his victory over Chris Jericho at Full Gear, tonight was the night for MJF and Wardlow to be inducted into the Inner Circle. So Chris Jericho came out to lead the festivities, and he introduced Jake Hager, Santana. So he introduces all the original members of the Inner Circle except Sammy Guevara. Sammy is not there. Jericho's saying, where is he? He was released from the hospital. Where is Sammy? He's like, all right, whatever. No big deal. We're going to move along here. So nobody knows where Sammy Guevara is. He introduces Wardlow. He introduces MJF. They come out. And MJF comes to the podium. He's acting very sarcastic, very emotional. This means so much to him. He then is going to read a poem that he has prepared, which was just the lyrics to a Drake song called All Me. And Santana and Ortiz got very heated. Ortiz was adamant. He was absolutely adamant that this man does not belong in the Inner Circle. He is dead set against him joining the group. Jericho said MJF beat him. He beat him. Not necessarily fair and square, but he beat him. And so he's a man of his word. And look, whether you like it or not, he's going to be part of the Inner Circle. He goes with MJF's mind and Wardlow's muscle, the Inner Circle. is going to be stronger than ever. MJF says he doesn't even know who Drake is. And then he says, started from the bottom and now we're here. MJF said, look, we're not just here to celebrate my induction into the inner circle. We're here to celebrate your birthday. And confetti and balloons fell from the ceiling. And I don't know if he had any of the bubbly, you know, for Jericho's birthday, but they probably should have celebrated. I am very curious to try this out. Look at that. Look at that. He's got his, this guy is not a vain person, right? He's got his face on the friggin' bottle. It'd be a miracle if I can get this cork off without putting my eye out. We'll try that tomorrow night. When we're on YouTube Live tomorrow night. So they're celebrating for Jericho's birthday, which I believe was last week. And then the big announcement from MJF, he announced that the Inner Circle is going to Vegas. He bought tickets to Las Vegas next week, and they're all going, and it's all paid for by him. Jericho was ecstatic. Everybody was excited except Santana and Ortiz. They weren't very excited. And then they sang happy birthday to close the segment. I enjoyed this. It looks like they may be playing a bit of the long game here. It's exactly what I said last week. I think MJF joins the Inner Circle. And slowly but surely, he begins to cause a fracture in the group. He is going to single-handedly turn these guys against Chris Jericho and get Jericho ousted from his own group. Or he's just going to try to kill the whole group altogether. Because I don't know that any of them are going to want to stick with the Inner Circle with MJF if Jericho leaves. I mean, clearly they don't like MJF. Ortiz is on to him. Sammy Guevara knows he's full of shit. But his mission here, Jericho is completely oblivious. Jericho's oblivious on a lot of things. But Jericho is completely oblivious to what MJF is trying to do here. So I like that story. I think next week the segment in Vegas could be very entertaining. So I enjoyed this as the next step in the storyline. I enjoyed this. Alex Marvez earlier in the day had the unfortunate responsibility of being dispatched to the back to conduct an interview with the Young Bucks, the same Young Bucks who kicked him in the face about a month ago on TV. So he was very nervous. The Bucks said that they are looking for fresh opponents to step into the ring with. And Matt Jackson mentioned a hot independent tag team who I think reached out to him on Instagram, he claimed a few months ago. Team called Top Flight. And he said, you know what? Next week on Dynamite, it's going to be the Young Bucks against Top Flight. Top Flight just made their AEW Dark debut, I believe last week or the week before. And they got a win on Dark. So that was their debut in the company. According to Miro, on one of his, I guess, Twitch streams, or maybe it was some kind of YouTube interview he did, he let it leak that Top Flight has signed with the company. So at least according to Miro, they have signed a contract. I mean, Miro was the one who kind of spoiled the news about Ben Carter signing with WWE. He made a comment, this is before it became official, that Ben Carter had in fact signed with WWE. He made a comment on one of his streams that, we lost him to WWE or the Evil Empire, however he referred to them. So Miro is that guy who kind of inadvertently breaks news about various signings or near signings in the company. And AEW jumped the gun because they originally announced for tonight's show a tag team championship match between the Young Bucks and Top Flight. And then the match suddenly got canceled for no reason. Nobody could figure out why. Well, now we know why. They jumped the gun a little too soon. And instead, it's going to be Airwolf and Angel Dorado. They are Top Flight, taking on the Young Bucks next week. I didn't catch if they called this a title match. I don't believe it is. I don't really see why it would be. I mean, they just debuted. Why would they be getting a title match? The match itself is probably going to be pretty crazy, though. That's coming up on the show next week. Food Hive says, I've been waiting to find out who that beautiful woman was and was always watching with the other wrestlers. Now we know Jade Cargill. So we have at least one Jade Cargill fan here already in the chat tonight. I have a feeling she probably made a lot of fans after tonight for the people who never saw her before. Jacob Donnelly, who's ready for Cody against General Auto Insurance? to the general and save some time. What's that jingle? I was hearing it in my head. Naif, thank you for the $10. Naif Al-Safar. Spanish Goddish. Disappointing finish to the bunkhouse match, and what a terrible Cody segment, but the Seidel cage match was great. So was the Lucha Bros and Pac return. It was a 7 out of 10 episode. Yeah, I mean, look, it's like I said at the top. I thought it was a good show. I don't think it was a blowaway 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 show. You know, they had a good follow-up to the pay-per-view, right? We have Pac back, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. There were some good matches on the show. There were some, you know, weaker parts. But on the whole, I thought it was a pretty good show. Lord Frieza, finally back. Good to see you. That Cody segment was terrible. 7 out of 10, Jesse. Another 7 out of 10. Sean Spears against Scorpio Sky. I feel like these two have been feuding now for a few months. This match was supposed to happen, I think, a few weeks ago. Was it last week? I think it was maybe a couple weeks ago. On Dynamite. Maybe it was last week. I don't know. These shows all blend together. You do this every single week. They all blend together after a while. It didn't happen. Scorpio was held out of the show due to some COVID concerns, but now he was back. He and Sean Spears one-on-one. So Sky fights out of the C4, hits a plancha and a slingshot cutter, and Spears set up the ring steps outside the ring. He kind of positioned them. Scorpio Sky attempted a diving clothesline off of the ring steps. Spears kicked him out of the air before dropping him with a sidewalk slam onto the steps. Spears went for the TKO. Scorpio turned it into a sharpshooter. Now, at this point, while he's got Sean Spears in the sharpshooter, Tully Blanchard goes over to the corner, and he drops a foreign object. And Excalibur calls it a slug. Now, I will admit, it is possible that on Dark, where I believe Excalibur and Taz do the commentary, if I'm not mistaken, every week, on there they may have referred to it as a slug, but he was going up, a slug, and even Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone were like, well, whatever that is. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, why is he, why a slug? To me, it just looked like some kind of metal foreign object. But Excalibur is very, very particular, he is. It was a slug. He left a slug in the corner. Like a bug. Tully then distracted the referee and Scorpio Sky. That allowed Sean Spears to crawl over and grab the steel slug and slip it on into his loaded glove. He clobbered Sky with the glove. And that was enough to get the 3 count. I don't really care. I really don't. Scorpio Sky is better than this. Scorpio Sky will go on to be one of the big names, I think, of the crop of young talent they have in AEW. I think that's what he's being groomed for. You know, more than Frankie Kazarian, Chris Daniels is closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning of it. But Scorpio Sky can go on, I think, to kind of be in that category. People talk about MJF and Darby, but, you know, he's one of those kind of younger stars in AEW who I think should eventually go on to a bigger thing. Sean Spears, not going to happen. If it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. I think he's a good hand for them to have, working with those guys like Scorpio Sky, but Scorpio more so than him. He's the one who is eventually going places. Sean Spears doing the loaded glove gimmick. You know, it's old school. I can't say it really gets me excited. So Dasha was about to do an interview in the back with Kenny Omega, but when they went to her, Kenny was not anywhere to be found. And she said he just left in a huff. Alex Marvez caught him outside. He was exiting the building. Omega was talking to somebody on his cell phone. It looked like he was headed for his car. And Alex wanted to know his thoughts on the championship match with Jon Moxley coming up on December the 2nd. And Kenny said that he needs this championship to live up to the reputation that Kenny Omega has. And he actually name-dropped New Japan. Now, he said that he's heard it from a lot of people now for a very long time that, you know, what happened to the Kenny Omega that was in New Japan who was having 5 and 6 and 7 star matches? You know, that's the Kenny Omega that I need to get back to. That's the Kenny Omega that the people want to see. So now he's openly acknowledging this on TV. Says that this is really the official first match between them. The first match they had at Full Gear was actually a non-sanctioned match. It did not count in the rankings. It did not count as an official match. So this will be their first official match in AEW coming up on Dynamite next month. Then he says he has a flight to catch and he bailed. My question is, a flight where? Is that going to be part of some kind of storyline? Is he going to meet with somebody? It's the middle of the show. What flight is he trying to catch here? We'll see if this goes anywhere. Tay Conti. So, hold on a second. Is Scorpio Sky 37? I didn't realize he was that old. Not that I would think 37 is old, but I thought Scorpio Sky was like 33, 34. So if he's 37, I mean, that surprises me, but so what? So what? 37 is not that old. 37, he could still be one of those rising names in the company. Not every future star has to be under the age of 30. But he's older than I thought. I actually thought he was a few years younger than that. Well, good for him. He looks younger. That's a compliment. That's a compliment. That's what people say to me. People would be shocked, I think. Some people, anyway, if they knew how old I was. Tay Conti with Anna Jay in her corner. One-on-one against Red Velvet with Brandi Rhodes in hers. Conti took control early with some judo throws. They went to commercial, as they do with all of the women's matches. And to be fair, most of the men's matches, but every single women's match, they have at least one commercial break. They usually don't go long enough to have a second one. So they come back, and Red Velvet hit some clotheslines, a bulldog as well, hit double knees and a stunner for a near fall. They hit double roundhouse kicks. Both women go down. Anna Jay slips a chair into the ring to Tay Conti, and Conti, she doesn't want to cheat. She says, I don't want to do it that way, and she kicks the chair out of the ring. Velvet surprises her with a leg lariat for a near fall and misses a drop kick. So she misses a drop kick. Conti hits a stiff-looking pump kick. I thought she could have won the match with it. She could have won the match with the pump kick. So that was a stiff-looking kick. Follows that up with a gory special into a knee strike for the win. I thought that this was very good. I didn't know what to expect coming into this match. Tay Conti, I think, was a big misfire by WWE. She's definitely got talent, but Red Velvet I'm not as familiar with. And I thought these women went in there and had a very good match. I thought they both looked good. Backstage, we've got MJF in the Inner Circle. And they're very excited about their little Vegas vacation coming up next week. All of a sudden, Sammy Guevara finally shows up, and he is not happy. And he looks at MJF, and he says, you sent me to the beach. You sent me an email telling me that we were meeting at the beach. And MJF says, didn't you get my second email? And Sammy says, I didn't get no second email. I got your first email. You told me to go to the beach. And Jericho is trying to calm things down. He says, all right, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. Everybody calm down. We're all going to Vegas next week. And the segment ends with MJF giving Sammy his own ticket. I got your ticket here, too. Sammy Guevara does not trust this man. Sammy Guevara does not like this man. It almost feels like Sammy Guevara is being set up for a babyface turn. I kind of felt that way coming out of the Matt Hardy match, even more so here. Remember, he had that pretty intense stare down with MJF a few weeks ago on Dynamite in the back. So I think we may be in for babyface Sammy here before long. Only question is, does he get kicked out of the Inner Circle because he can't be a team player? Or how exactly are they going to work this? But I think that's where we're headed. Main event was round two between Penta El Cerro Miedo against Rey Fénix. Eddie Kingston sat in on commentary for this one. And Tony Schiavone pointed out that, you know, these two were brothers. And ever since they hooked up with you and you started managing them, there's friction there. These two guys are at each other's throat. I mean, they're family, they're blood, and yet they're at each other's throats. And Eddie Kingston says, you know, brothers fight, nothing to worry about. But he kept talking about Penta. Penta's my best friend, right? He's been saying that for weeks. He doesn't say Phoenix. He goes, Pentagon. Penta is my best friend. And that's when I started thinking, okay, he's saying this for a reason. They're playing this angle up on commentary here where Eddie Kingston is the root of the discord between Rey Fénix and Penta. And Eddie Kingston is really going in hard on the fact that Penta is my best friend. And it almost feels like he may be trying to drive a wedge between them. This is where Pac can then come back. And maybe that's why they're doing this match as the main event on this show. Lo and behold, we would find out that answer in a few minutes later. Penta used a... I thought this was cool. He used a standing submission on Fénix. He basically had him in a tombstone pile driver position, held him there, and then grabbed Fénix's legs and just sort of bent them behind him. Which, if you stare at them in that position, it looks kind of sexual. So I don't know that I would necessarily apply that hold to my opponent, but I suppose it would hurt. Somebody had me upside down and was bending my legs behind me, but visually, kind of, you know, I mean, you have these unfortunate visuals sometimes. Hulk Hogan in the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6 when Hogan had Warrior down on his knees in the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and you know what I'm talking about. There are some unfortunate instances of that happening. Pentagon starts ripping at Phoenix's mask. These guys were going Lucha Underground on each other. Every week on Lucha Underground, people were trying to rip the masks off each other. Mil Muertes was ripping the mask off Phoenix every time they got in the ring together. And now Pentagon is doing the same thing to his brother. The announcers are appalled by this because, you know, it's tradition. This is a horrible thing that he's doing to his brother. Phoenix returned the favor to Penta a few minutes later. He started ripping his mask. We basically saw Pentagon unmasked. And pretty much. I mean, most of his mask was just ripped off here. You saw the curly hair underneath. You saw half of his face. These guys were really going at it. Phoenix hit a tornillo out of the ring. Had to get 3 or 4 spins. This guy was spinning like a corkscrew out of that ring. And then hit the senton on Phoenix. Only got a 2 count. Pentagon then said, basically, fuck this. He's out on the apron with his brother. He gives his brother a package pile driver on the apron. Phoenix bounced off of the ring apron and then fell down to the floor. That looked brutal. He follows that up with a destroyer. Pentagon jumps off the apron and hits a destroyer to his brother on the floor after giving him a package pile driver on the ring apron. So now I'm thinking, all right, if he puts him back in the ring, and that is not the end of the match, I'm done. Like, I'm done. I'm finished. How could that not be the finish of this match? So he puts Phoenix back in the ring, and before he goes for the pin or anything, he gives him one more package pile driver, and then he pins him. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for not going overboard with all the kickouts. You're going to give somebody a package pile driver on the apron, let alone a destroyer after. You better fucking win the match. You better roll that SOB back in the ring, and you better pin him. And that's what Pentagon did here. He got the win. Eddie Kingston stands up at the announce desk. He says, hey, TNT, we got a few extra minutes here, don't we? Walks to the ring. And he gave Phoenix, who was out cold on the ground, he gave Phoenix a little, you know, while he's talking to Penta, he goes over to Phoenix and he gives him a little kick. He kicks Penta, he kicks Phoenix out of the ring. And he's talking to Pentagon about, you don't need him. I know he's your brother, but he's dead weight. You don't need him. You got me. All of a sudden the music hits, and who is it? Out comes Pac. Pac is back. He's got a mic in his hand. He's addressing Eddie Kingston. He goes, bad news, scumbag. The bastard is back. You have made a very, very big mistake. And he goes to the ring. There's a big pull apart between Pac and Eddie Kingston. And Tony Khan, he's very quick to the draw. Tony Schiavone, this guy just came back. This is Pac's first appearance on television in the building in 7 months. And within 60 seconds of him coming out, Tony Schiavone gets word in his ear from Tony Khan that next week it's going to be Pac one-on-one against The Blade, who, of course, is a member of Eddie Kingston's faction. So that match is now official for next week. And look at Eddie Kingston. He transitions from one program, a main event program with the world champion. He just headlined a pay-per-view. And a few days later, he basically headlines, in that he ended the show, this episode of Dynamite. He transitions right from a feud with Jon Moxley right into a feud with Pac. So I like that they're keeping Kingston in the thick of things here. You know, he had his shot against Moxley. It was a nice story seeing him challenge for the title. He was never going to win the title. We know that. But Eddie Kingston is still one of the best performers they have in the entire company. Not necessarily in the ring. Definitely not in the ring. But on the mic. That's where he can really sell you. So I like that they're keeping him in the mix. I like that Pac is back. We pretty much could probably figure that after they aired that vignette for him last week. He's going to be a great addition back to the roster. He's been gone for far too long. And now I guess the story is, you know, is he going to try to get the Lucha Bros away from Eddie Kingston and reunite Death Triangle, which was a very short-lived group? They really weren't together for very long before COVID hit. And then everything just went to hell. So are they going to reform their faction? Are the Lucha Bros going to stick with Eddie Kingston? Maybe Penta will and Phoenix won't. Maybe they'll split. And you know what? I'm okay with that, because on the one hand, it would suck to lose one of the best tag teams in the entire company. But I don't worry about Pentagon going on and having success as a single. I've been waiting for it since Lucha Underground ended. I would love to see that Pentagon come back. And Rey Fénix on his own as a single, he'll do fine too. So if they want to split those guys up for a while and let them kind of go their separate ways, that's two big additions to your singles roster. I would hate to lose the team. But I'm okay if they want to give these guys singles pushes. So are they going to go in that direction? I don't know. I kind of feel like it's going to end up with Pac reunited with the Lucha Bros. But it's good to have him back. I enjoyed the ending to the show. I enjoyed the MJF segment. The Cody segment, I thought Brandy stole that one. You know, again, Jade, call it nerves, call it whatever, far too scripted, just not good, not great delivery on that at all. But Brandy came out, and she definitely did not sound overly rehearsed or nervous or anything like that. That was quite the promo that she cut on Jade. Now, if they end up having a match, I shudder, because Brandy is not exactly the best of the best in the women's division, and Jade is very inexperienced. Now, I don't know that I've ever seen any of her matches, so it's possible that if she starts wrestling on Dynamite, she'll impress me. I'm going to guess, though, that she, like Anna Jay, right? Love seeing Anna Jay. Could be a lot of potential there in the ring. Anna Jay is very green. You watch an Anna Jay match, she's not great. She's very inexperienced. So let's hold off on the Jade and Brandy match, please, for a while. How about this? Let's take the Jade and Brandy match and kind of put that on the back burner with Cody against Shaq. Let's build to it. Let's take our time building to it. And not really focus too much on the actual matches, because I don't have a good feeling about either one of those. Maybe they'll do a tag match. Maybe that's the idea. I'm not sure that would be any better if they did Cody and Brandy against Shaq and Jade. I don't know that really sounds much better to me. Very curious exactly what they have planned with Shaq here. I just don't see him doing a match. And I don't want to see him do a match. But now you've teased it, you've basically promised it, you've got to deliver something now. If not a straight one-on-one match, then what? You know, there's any number of roles you could put him in, like what they did with Mike Tyson. Although Mike Tyson sat there and he yawned Let's hope that doesn't happen with Shaq. That was very unfortunate when they got a shot at Mike Tyson sitting at ringside watching that TNT, was it the TNT tournament final? He was caught yawning on TV. That was not one of the better AEW moments. That's probably a moment they'd like to forget. Over 1,000 votes in already in the poll. 78% thumbs up, 21% thumbs down. NXT, 63% thumbs up, 36% thumbs down. Hardcore in the chat wonders if there may be an independent wrestler named Shaq. I really hope they don't go this route. I don't think that would be legal if there was an independent wrestler named Shaq and it was spelled that way. So no, I don't think that's what's going on here. At least but then again, if there is an independent wrestler named Shaq, it probably would be a better match if you put him in the ring with Cody instead. Food Hive wants to just shout out everybody in the chat, as I do as well. Thank you. Everybody who is joining tonight, I'm really glad YouTube worked out their issues. Everybody was freaking out earlier tonight about YouTube being down and YouTube not working. And I'm thinking, of course, Wednesday night, right? Going to go stream, YouTube's down. But then it all got resolved. So far, so good. We're good to go. Again, if you want to send in a super chat, I'm going to read your messages here. That was from Food Hive. We've got Maroa. Maroa12004 with the $10. It was not a bad show, but some advice to Tony Khan. Don't promise a surprise that will be a game changer that changes wrestling's landscape and it ends up being a Pac return. And I am a big fan of Pac. So that's why I let off the stream mentioning the Tony Khan tweet. Thank you for reminding me. I was going to come back to it. I'm wondering if that, because he's been promising surprises coming in the weeks to come. So it's possible that him saying that this was going to be a big shift in the wrestling business was referring to other things they have planned in the weeks to come. But I agree. You know, when you put a tweet like that out, you have to, and Tony Khan is a wrestling fan. Tony Khan has been reading the wrestling newsletters since he was a teenager. I mean, he's a wrestling fan, right? So he should understand the whole mentality that if you tease something or you promise something like that, you use big words like, it's going to be a big shift or it's going to be revolutionary, whatever the word is that they use. You have to be able to deliver on that. You know, there were still people on social media tonight because of him posting that who thought, oh, tonight's the night that Sting is going to debut. There's still people hung up on Sting. Let it go. Let it go. Leave the man be. It's not Sting. Darby is up in the raft. He's like, he's got the rafter stuff covered. They don't need Sting. But yes, when you make a comment like that, you have to expect that people are going to be disappointed when the show comes and goes and it's like, that's it. Because Pac, I mean, that's a reason to be happy to have Pac back on TV. But I agree. If I had looked at that and didn't know any better, I would think, wow, they got a major surprise planned for the end of the show tonight. And then I would see Pac and I would think, that's disappointing. So you got to be careful when you post stuff like that on Twitter. You can't be kind of over-promising things. Jared M. Wow, holy shit. Jared M. with the $40 super chat drop. Jared, I thank you, sir. Thank you, Jared. Says, no real game changers tonight, as Khan said, but in my opinion, a fantastic show. Oz and Glorious says, QT Marshall sucks as much as Tay Conti is hot. If AEW is here, please stop putting him on Dynamite. I get the sense that there's a lot of people who like QT. He's well-liked. He just doesn't really belong on Dynamite. I mean, you've only got so much TV time to go around, and he's not really involved in what I would consider to be any kind of major storyline at the moment. He would not be on my list of people to have on Dynamite coming out of a major pay-per-view. Although, again, I thought the bunkhouse match was fun. Rodimus Prime, glad to see the Bastard Pack in AEW. Oz and Gloria, seriously, why is Lance Archer regularly off TV while we have to suffer through 10 to 15 minutes of QT? Oh my God. Every week, this is the QT Marshall. People beating up on QT Marshall here. Well, but you know what? That's a great point. Lance Archer was on the pay-per-view in another segment with Jake Roberts beating up some guy in an alleyway. They can't find anything for Lance Archer to do, but they can find something for QT Marshall. We had Sean Spears on the show tonight. We had QT Marshall on the show tonight. And still no Lance Archer? Something is very wrong with that. AEW has their priorities out of whack. Scorpio Sky and Sean Spears, I kind of feel like the majority of their feud has probably played out more on Dark than it has Dynamite. That should have been the main event on Dark. I don't really think that match belonged on Dynamite. But yeah, how about you find a spot for Lance Archer instead of just doing segments every week where you admit that you don't have anything for him to do? Come up with something for him to do. Dark will always be there for the Sean Spears and the QT Marshalls of the world. Oz and Gloria says, Brandi Rhodes is a saint. Food Hive, also a very big Brandi Rhodes fan. Tenorio, I hope you're doing well. Did you see the video of that wrestler that broke both of his legs in the ring? I did. That was a few weeks ago. That is one of the sickest things I have ever seen. It almost didn't look real. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was some kind of effect. Unfortunately, it was not. Not only was it not a special effect, but there is a GoFundMe set up for him. He broke both of his legs, and last I heard, and this was a few weeks ago, so I don't know what the latest update is on that guy. He was in jeopardy of losing one or both of his legs. I mean, there was talk that he might have to have both legs amputated. That's how bad the injuries are. So that was very much a real thing. He is pretty messed up right now. So that was just, Ugh. I always used to think that the Sid Vicious injury in WCW was the most brutal wrestling injury I've ever seen. This one was worse. This was both legs. Can you imagine if he has to have them both amputated? All he did was just, you know, it wasn't even like he was doing some kind of backflip off the top rope. He was just posing on the middle turnbuckle, and then he just jumped down. But it just goes to show you, you know, there's a reason. You've got to be in a certain physical condition to do what these guys do. And that, to me, just comes off as a guy playing wrestler on some backyard independent mud show who probably has no business being in the ring. And then what ends up happening is the guy breaks both of his legs. So, I don't know. I hope he's okay, and I hope everything works out for him, but that was one of the sickest things I've ever seen. Jackalope, buy or sell Shaq versus Orange Cassidy instead. How about we don't do Shaq against anybody? How about that? I buy on that. I sell on any match involving Shaq. There is no opponent you could put in the ring with Shaq. I take that back. The only match I would accept is Shaq against Charles Barkley, just because I enjoy the interplay between them. I don't even really watch the NBA, but I will watch Inside the NBA sometimes just to see the banter between them. That's the only Shaq match I would accept. Dried chicken without flavor. If Cody attacks Shaq out of nowhere on the NBA on TNT show to get major publicity, my mind will explode. Well, I don't think he's going to be on the set to attack him. I mean, that would be kind of crazy. I don't see that happening. But yeah, I mean, look, get whatever publicity you can get out of it. Doesn't mean it has to be a singles match. Amari Johnson, excited about your mailbox show, but curious on why you didn't choose Friday the 13th. 13 years plus you being a big horror fan, it just seemed perfect. Yeah, you know what? Honest to God, I didn't realize that Friday the 13th until yesterday. But I don't think I would have wanted to do it then anyway, because it's SmackDown and there's other people doing SmackDown reviews. And A, I don't really want to interfere with that. But B, people are going to be tuning into SmackDown reviews. And I figure Thursday, there's really nothing going on tomorrow night. So it was just an open night. I thought that was, but you're right. Friday the 13th is the very next night. So you almost could not have timed that any better. I hope that means you'll be joining at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. We're going to have a good time. Going to be answering questions, celebrating 13 years. It's going to be fun. Brandon V with the $5. Thank you very much. Kenny Omega wins on December 2nd. Moxley is supposed to defend the U.S. title at Wrestle Kingdom and needs to quarantine for 2 weeks before and after. Rematch for the AEW title at Revolution. Well, there you go. I mean, that makes perfect sense. And I was just talking about that on the Sound Off on Sunday. I was running down some of the results from the Power Struggle show because now they have a whole bunch of matches set up for Wrestle Kingdom. And you know what? That makes total sense. I was saying if Moxley is going to defend the title against Kenta, he's going to have to fly in a couple of weeks early. And then coming out of the show, he's going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So he would have to miss at least two, if not more than two, episodes of Dynamite. So I think you may be onto something there. I think you may be onto something because he drops the belt. He can go off and do whatever he needs to do in New Japan. They could even do a big injury angle coming out of the match on December 2nd. And when Moxley is ready to come back, once he's back from Japan, he comes back and he's looking for Kenny Omega. And you're right, they build to a rematch, maybe with some kind of stipulation at the pay-per-view in February. That makes total sense. That might just answer that question. Mako29, please tell me I was not the only one who remembered the spot involving Kenny King getting caught by Lashley on Impact when Cage caught Matt Sydal. I've seen a few people do that spot. Bobby Lashley has done that in multiple matches. He's done that in WWE as well. In fact, I think he did it with Ricochet in a few matches. It always gets a pop out of me catching somebody in midair. Actually, Braun Strowman, I think, has done it maybe. It's always a very impressive spot. Takes a lot of strength and cooperation to pull something like that off. A dry chicken without flavor. I was a little disappointed in the fact that Allie does not have any blood on her outfit. Bloody Bunny would have been a gold mine for her next t-shirt merchandise. Bloody Bunny. That's kind of sick. Magician Sapphire with the 10 spot. Shaq versus Cody. To quote the immortal Solomonster during his review of Undertaker Goldberg, that's a bad idea. It is. It is a bad idea. Uffman Entertainment for a great low rate. You can get online, go to the general. Oh, there you go. For a great low rate, you can get online, go to the general and save some time. There you go. That's the song I was thinking of. That's the song I was thinking of. I always see those commercials. Also, we got to teach you to roll your R's plus Jade's legs equal ratings. I've tried to roll my R's. I've tried to roll every letter in the alphabet. I can't do it. I just can't do it. I've tried. It's like me trying to do the Vulcan hand sign thing. I just can't do it. I'm just incapable of doing it. Dry chicken without flavor. Rest in peace, Alex Trebek, WrestleMania 7. I was very sad to hear that Alex Trebek passed away. I think people kind of knew it was coming. I was surprised he held on as long as he did. I mean, what he had at that stage, that type of cancer, not too many people survive a year, and he survived a year and a half. But just seemed like an awesome dude. I didn't watch Jeopardy all the time, but Jeopardy, I mean, it's been on as long as I've been alive. I mean, I remember watching Jeopardy with my, you know, mother and my brother at times over the years. And very sad. Very sad. But he was working right up until the very end. I mean, he's got new episodes airing, I think, through the end of next month. I'm curious if they're going to just keep the show. I mean, I'm sure they're going to keep the show going. The show is a cash cow. Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune. You know how much money those shows probably make for those stations? Tens of millions of dollars. They're not just going to let it die. It's probably going to be Ken Jennings. Ken Jennings is probably going to get it. Food, you know what also is kind of crazy? Yeah, you mentioned WrestleMania 7. Alex Trebek had a cameo at WrestleMania 7. You know who else had a cameo at WrestleMania 7? Regis Philbin. And Regis just died about, what, how many weeks ago did Regis die? Within a few weeks. We lost Regis and Alex Trebek. This year fucking sucks. Can't wait for this year to be over. Let's start off with 516.
Hey, Jason, what's up? I don't know if it's just me, but I've watched every single episode of AEW. I just don't care about the Bucks and Kenny Omega, like, at all.
Yeah, the Bucks, I don't know, the Bucks, it's weird. I think they really shot themselves in the foot with that nonsense, with them just acting like a couple of school kids and just kicking people in the face and stuff and acting kind of heelish. I thought it was stupid. I don't see how that advanced the story at all, especially because of the pay-per-view. They were just back to being baby faces, and Matt Jackson was selling an injury. So I think they really, whatever kind of buzz is the right word, but it really cooled them off for me. Kenny, though, I'm excited to see Kenny Omega try to get back to where he used to be. I think that he could have some pretty kick-ass matches with some of the people on that roster. But yeah, I don't blame you for feeling that way, especially about the Bucks. I kind of feel the same way.
Well, I'm worried about the same thing that's going to happen with Kenny with Mox. They're only going to have a 2-week build, and like, oh, Kenny's like, I'm the best, and then Moxley hasn't been like, I'm like the best. He's like, I'm badass. I'm, you know, all that stuff. So I don't think they're going to have I don't think their styles are going to mesh well. I don't think they're going to have a good match, and I think it's going to be underwhelming if he wins in 2 weeks.
No, I mean, look, the one match they had, it's hard to judge what kind of regular match they'll have, because the match they had was a death match, basically, last year. So now they're going to go in there, no weapons, no barbed wire, and they're going to have a match. I don't know what leads you to think that they're not going to mesh. I don't think we know. I think they'll have a very good match, and I'm okay with them doing the title change, because I think Moxley probably, what the super chat, I forgot who it was, but he made a great point. If he's going to Japan to wrestle on the Wrestle Kingdom show, Moxley's going to be gone for at least a few weeks. So what if they're going to shoot a major angle on that December 2nd show? Maybe Kenny goes full heel and just goes crazy and does whatever it takes to win the championship, because he feels like, I have to, right? I have to get back to being that Kenny Omega again. And I said they could do an injury angle if they want, but the title change, it just feels right. It feels like the time has come. I mean, who else is left? We've seen Moxley against Archer. We've seen him against Brody Lee. We've seen him against MJF. We've seen him against Eddie Kingston. I think there's somebody else I'm missing. If not Kenny, then who?
I would give it to Kingston. I think Kingston is a good heel, and you can line up all these baby faces that they have, and you can, you know, have him be like this, like, never say die heel, and then eventually he can turn a baby face, because he's totally a baby face. Like, yeah. I'm a New Yorker. I love him. He needs to be a baby face. Just don't tell the crowd to fuck themselves. And, you know, like, I think it'd work.
Yeah, but I don't think he needs that. He doesn't need the title. And look, when you have a world champion, I'm not saying that Jon Moxley is some master ring technician, but when you got the world title, there's a certain expectation, a certain level, quality level that people expect from those main events. Eddie Kingston can do a lot of things. Eddie Kingston is not that kind of worker. So I don't think Eddie Kingston is the right person to be putting in pay-per-view main events every single month. Eddie Kingston is the kind of person, he doesn't need to be the world title holder. He doesn't need to be the champion. So I don't doubt that he would cut these awesome promos. And look, if they gave him the title of Full Gear and they wanted to give him a few weeks with it, all right, fine. But he's not the long-term answer. So I disagree on that. But let me ask you this before I let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're not the biggest fan of Kenny. You think that it should have been Kingston. Let's take Kingston out of the equation, and let's take Kenny out of the equation. I pose the same question. If not them, then who?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe you put it on Lance Archer, and you have him be just a dominant, like, monster heel, and then you build up a Hulk Hogan or Cena type babyface, and then you have him overcome that. You know,
we could do that.
I was watching Brian Cage. And the way that he, like, got up and the way that he showed fire, I just think that he, like, would make a really good babyface. He's young. He's not the best, but
Brian Cage?
I don't know. I think he's a good, like, let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that could work. I mean, he's been babyface before. It was an Impact, I think, right? He was a babyface champion?
Maybe. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
I keep my feelings out, but I don't know everything. So, okay, yeah. I don't want to keep you on the phone forever, but...
Yeah, okay.
I just wanted to give my opinion.
No, that's fine. That's a good call.
All right. Goodbye.
All right, take care. But again, I mean, I pose that question to all of you. If you're not a fan of putting the title on Kenny Omega, and it's not going to Eddie Kingston, then who? You know, he mentions Lance Archer. I kind of wish they hadn't already beaten him, which they already did. Yeah, I mean, but Archer could be someone. I mean, God knows he's not doing anything else right now. But it's not like they have these people that are just ready to take that title from Jon Moxley. It feels like it's Omega's time. They've waited this long. Now he's getting the big singles push. It has to go to him to get to Hangman. The belt is ultimately going to end up on Hangman Page. Probably not until later next year. It's got to get to Kenny first. Otherwise, none of this story works. So whether it's now or in a few months from now, the end result is the same. Kenny Omega has to get that championship, because he is the one that Hangman Page eventually has to take the title from when Hangman gets his win back. He lost to Kenny on the pay-per-view on Saturday. It's almost like the Darby story with Cody, where Darby could not beat Cody. And I said, when he finally beats him, he's the one to take the TNT title away from him. And that's exactly what happened. So it's the same thing here. But it has to go to Omega in order for that story to work. 657.
Salam Monster, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
I wasn't able to watch Dynamite, but I caught up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a question for you. Do you think that the pandemic has something to do with AEW doing more comedy? Because I don't know. I feel like if some of the stuff they've done was in front of a live crowd, I feel like it would just get booed.
Yeah,
it has.
And I'll tell you, the first thing I thought of was the Stadium Stampede. And I enjoyed the Stadium Stampede, but if not for COVID, there is no Stadium Stampede. If not for COVID, yeah. Double or Nothing is back at the MGM in Vegas. So there's one match right there we never would have gotten were it not for the pandemic. So I think they have relied more on comedy, but yeah, the Jericho stuff with Orange Cassidy, I think that would have happened no matter what. The Hardy Compound match we had at Full Gear, I think we were going to get a Hardy Compound match at some point anyway. So yeah, I think a lot of the comedy would have been there, but some of it absolutely came as a result of the pandemic. There's just some things that they couldn't do. And again, they still haven't done that Blood and Guts match from earlier this year.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's like, it just feels, I don't see how I'm going to enjoy Cody and Shaq. I'm sorry. You know, I don't get it. But speaking of Cody, I don't know if you've heard him. He was on a call. He was on a conference call, I think. And I don't know if you've talked about this already, but he was asked that, I guess he was basically asked why they did Nyla and Sheeta again. And his answer was something along the lines of AEW isn't going to rely on story when it comes to their feud or something like that. Like, he said something along the lines of wrestling fans are conditioned to just have stories with all the feuds, and AEW wasn't going to rely on that. And that was kind of his justification for...
Yeah, that sounds weird. I'd have to see the exact quote and like what the context was, because they do plenty of stories in the company, so that doesn't even make any sense. I mean, there was a story with Cody and Darby. There's a story with the Bucks and Kenny and everything, and Hangman and everything they're doing there. There's a story with the Bucks and FTR. There was the storytelling with Moxley and Eddie Kingston. So unless his point was that not every match needs a story, because this notion that they were going to be more sports-oriented, and so, you know, sometimes somebody in the rankings is just going to be the next contender. I don't know. I'd have to see the quote. I know he gave a conference call. I did not hear that part. So if you can get that quote, like the whole question and answer for me, and maybe email it to me so I could take a look at it, I would love to know what the full context was, because that's a very bizarre thing for him to say, if that's what he said.
Yeah, for sure. I'll go ahead and email that to you.
Cool.
But that was all I had. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, that is a very weird statement to make, because they have stories. It's not like this is a company completely devoid of stories. They've done actually quite a few stories that have played out over a period of months. You know, again, unless he was trying to say that not every match or feud needs a story. That's true. That I would agree with, if that's what he was saying. Sometimes you're just going to have two people that you're matching up because you think it's going to be a good match. Maybe a story comes out of that. But if you're, if you've got your top like three or four programs, your three or four matches, and they have stories, you got to have stories. You have a television show. You have a television show that runs 52 weeks a year, maybe 51 if they're off around the holidays. It's a year-round show. There's no off-season. It's a TV show. You have to have stories. You have to have stories that thread from one week to the next. You can't have pro wrestling without stories. Pro wrestling without stories, it's called the independent spot show. That's what that's called. But that's not what this is. So that comment wouldn't even make any sense. I have to imagine that. I just need the context on that. Let's go to 313.
Hey, Solomouser. This is Justin from Detroit.
Hey, Justin.
I just really think, hey, like, it's getting really frustrating when they continuously do these things where, like, they keep putting over, like, QT, or they give these segments to, like, all these people who, like, really should not be on the main show. But then, like, they just mess up the segment by bringing in, like, Hobbs, instead of just Hobbs being that monster who, like, she's inviting to, like, be by her side. Like, I just don't understand how, like, they're not really building these strong characters out of the dark people, and they're just kind of, like, leaving all these, like, known characters kind of like in limbo. Like, there's better people who should be on the main show than what they're putting on there.
I agree. I mean, you have stories that play out mostly either on BTE or on Dark, then that's where they should be. You can't just assume that everybody who's watching Dynamite is going to be watching all of those shows and they're going to know every aspect of the story. But again, I look at Scorpio Sky against Sean Spears, and I can't get invested in that. I don't care. It doesn't excite me. Let's give a shout out to Dry Chicken, Oz and Glorious, everybody who did drop a super chat tonight. Abhinav Taramula dropped $2 as well. And Oz and Glorious again. Shaq Fu. Yeah, I forgot all about Shaq Fu. We'll leave Shaq Fu for another night. I will see you guys tomorrow night live on YouTube, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Sound Off Inbox Anniversary Edition. I hope you will join me then, problem-free. We'll bust out some of the bubbly. We'll have a grand old time. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for your support. And I will see you back here live on YouTube again tomorrow night. So until then, take care, guys.